Welcome to episode 18 of Roll the Quadcast. I'm Rob Reinhardt, joined as always by my wonderful co-host Riley Johnston, recording here on February 3rd. That's a Monday night. Riley, last episode we had a lot of positive things to say about the Deacs with regards to basketball. We had that big road win against Virginia Tech, and then had followed up with a really nice home win against Notre Dame. This past week, we can't say it didn't go as well.
So I'm not sure we can say anything.
We can't say anything. You know, I can't talk. I'm speechless after this week, and especially after that Georgia Tech game, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's start with the Syracuse game, since that happened first. The team, which now number one in the country, Syracuse, tough loss, 67-57, only down 3.5. What did you take out of that game?
I thought we started off pretty well. We up 12-6 at the 10-minute mark. We were playing slow-down ball. We looked pretty good. We were executing well. You know a team of Syracuse caliber is going to come out of their shell and start playing really well. I thought we attacked the zone well. I thought we did a fine job doing that. I like the motion, the high-low, the use of the baseline cuts. I thought we did that very, very executed that as the coaching staff would like to do. CJ Fair is just an extremely talented player. He and Tyler Ennis showed why Syracuse are the number one team in the country.
I hate to say he's a little overrated, but he is overrated in my opinion. But he's a very good college player. You're right. His length is extraordinary.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the first time I'd ever seen Syracuse in person, and you can't overstate how much their length affects the game defensively and offensively. Travis McCott's an average, probably 3.5, 4 in college basketball, and he looks like a midget compared to CJ Fair in terms of arm length and just stature on the court. I was impressed with the way we played. I don't think Syracuse executed very well throughout the game.
Didn't make shots.
No, they wound up 3-for-14, and as we talked about last podcast, if you leave a team open long enough, they're going to make them, because the biggest indicator of whether a team is going to make three is how many they take over a long period of time. And we're letting teams shoot threes, and it kind of burns against Georgia Tech. We've been lucky so far this season, but if we keep playing three-point defense like we have recently, it's going to continue to burn us. Hey, what were your thoughts overall about the Syracuse game?
Yeah, I mean, I was thrilled to be down. I don't mean to sound a little old Wake Forest, but I was thrilled to be down 3 at halftime. I thought that 3 from Travis McKay to cut the lead in half at that point was critical for us. We came out, and I believe we got a layup to start the second half on a good high-low play, as you had talked about, of how we've been trying to break the zone throughout the course of the game. Cut it to 1, hung with them pretty well there for the first 10 minutes of the second half, but you know, ultimately they just took over, and you look at the rebounding battle. I mean, they had 19 offensive rebounds compared to our 9, and you know, they had 36 defensive rebounds compared to our 26, so we only got 20% of offensive rebounds, and that's going against a zone defense. And even though they play it with, as Bill Raftery likes to say, man-to-man principles, that's still a pretty low percentage of offensive rebounding percentage going against a 2-3 zone defense, and because of that, they had 11 more two-point attempts and 6 fewer threes. So, but I mean, a big problem for us, we just could not convert from beyond the arc. I thought we had good shots. Travis McKay, 1-for-7. The 1-3 was the one we mentioned at the end of the half, and we ultimately went 3-for-20 from beyond the arc, which is not a winning formula. We caught Syracuse on a game where they did not play as well. If you saw how they played Saturday night against Duke, they were exceptional in that game.
Yes.
Duke was as well. I was an incredibly well played ball game. So we had our chance, but I thought turnovers were pretty good. We did a really good job of limiting turnovers against a zone, which, again, even though they play a zone, they force a ton of turnovers with that length that you talked about getting in the passing lane. So, I mean, overall, I certainly wasn't disappointed with this performance, and it gave me some optimism headed into Saturday. Unfortunately, that optimism was not warranted.
Yeah, and I mean, anytime your best player, I mean, it could be argued, I think Cody Miller-McIntyre is our best player.
I agree.
Has 6 shots and 4 points against Syracuse. I mean, you got to get more than 6 shots. And he, to a fault, lays back. And I think we've touched on this in the past. You know, he being mentored by Randall Childress, who I think has done an outstanding job with him over the last year and a half, especially in his transition game. I mean, I'm on record as saying I think Cody's transition game is one of the best by a guard in the ACC, if not the country. I mean, he's phenomenal in transition. He usually makes the right decision, and he can finish extremely well. But I mean, it's inexcusable for your best player to play 21 minutes and have 6 shots. He fouled out. He was
in foul trouble the vast majority of the game, and you know, he had some questionable fouls, but he had some dumb fouls too. I mean, he fouled that 3-point shooter, and I think that was his 3rd foul, and you cannot be doing that against an elite team like Syracuse. You can't be doing that against anybody.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that really doomed us was just the shooting. Karan and Travis combined to go 3 for 14, and a lot of those were good looks. I thought, you know, if Travis had knocked down some shots, he was open in a lot of them. But as Coach Brossy used to tell L.D. Williams, that there's a reason you're open, so
well,
you might want to look to
Travis
pass.
Is a better shooter than L.D.
He's
Williams,
a better shooter.
But yeah, open for a reason.
You know, overall, the Wake versus Syracuse game was kind of hard to take a lot out of that. I thought Syracuse didn't play quite to their level. We probably played up a little bit. They're obviously the better team. I just looked. C.J. Ferrer and Tyler Ennis both played all 40 minutes. That was a little shocking to me.
And Grant played 35.
Yeah, I mean, they're not a team with tremendous depth, but they are a very, very good team. I wish I could say their fans were deserving of that good a team, but based on what I saw, they will fit in well with the UNC and Duke fan bases here.
I was embarrassed by the display of some of the fans there. Not to make any sweeping statements about the fan base at large, because we like the guys at SB Nation at you know, Noon's Magician. There's some good guys, but you know, pretty disrespectful people who came into the Joel.
Yeah, I mean, act like you've been there before. You
waving flags when you're up 10 in the final quarter against, you know, Wake, a team you were a 8-point favorite against or something. You were 19-0. You know, act like you've been. You know, that should be a business.
Yeah, don't
get down.
You don't
there.
You don't boo injured players. You don't
boo injured players.
You
don't
curse
them to,
curse
you
the fans.
You don't tell them to suck it up. Okay, when we have a medical personnel attending to Bill Moto, who had the facial of facials, my lord.
Yeah, I think that was number 2 on sports.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty phenomenal.
That was, oh my goodness gracious, what a dunk. That brought the house down.
I tell you what, we've had a bad loss with this week, but I'd say it was probably our best week dunk-wise in the last 3 or 4 years.
Hey, I'm glad we got the fundamentals down.
Hey, hashtag culture. Moto had that huge dunk over, was it Keita? For Syracuse, tall black guy.
Keita.
They have a lot of lengthy players, and he was one of them. And then Cody Miller-McIntyre with the alley-oop. It was pretty tremendous, one-handed slam. And then Travis McKay taking it in and stuffing it over a couple of Georgia Tech players. Much like Carolina earlier in the year, top 10.
They won the highlight reel. They did not win the box score.
Yeah, so, I mean, played well against Syracuse, and not a lot to take out of it.
I say, you know, let's move on from that one overall.
Easy game against Georgia Tech. You got about a 75% chance to win, according to Ken Pomeroy.
Yeah, the best player, Robert Carter Jr., out with a torn meniscus.
Second best player,
Solomon Poole
was
out.
Yeah, he didn't play at all. He got dismissed from the team today.
I did really see that. Yeah, he was out with, you know, migraine issues and things like that.
And then Trey Golden hurt himself after 8 minutes.
And Jason Morris, I believe, broke his foot against Carolina on the Wednesday before the game. So things were setting up. I mean, believe they had 8 scholarship players.
Apparently players on our team didn't even realize who Trey Golden was, which we can touch on later.
We'll touch on that
later. I mean, I'm not sure how much.
A fantastic point guard transfer from Tennessee, for those who are unaware of who Trey Golden is. And it looks like he'll be back tomorrow night when they play. We heard that along with.
Just tweaked his ankle.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't too serious. You know, we're glad to hear that he'll be back. But
yeah, I don't
know. You know, you hear, yes, Cody Miller-McIntyre went out. Is he our best player? You just heard Riley and I say we think he's our best player. I think
he's definitely the catalyst.
A lot of
the ball
would agree. Regardless, he's an exceptional player for us, and he went down. But you know what? We hear all this about our depth is our strength. Okay. Well, that sounds like a team that should be well-suited to handle adversity, to handle injuries. I mean, injuries are part of the game. You know, that's the hand we got dealt. But we, you know, that was just a terrible performance.
Yeah, let's call it what it was. I mean, it was. It's the worst loss for a home team, to Wake Forest, to an ACC team at home in KenPom 11-year history. Georgia Tech came into the game.
Since 2002, right?
Yeah, yep. And Georgia Tech came into the game 139 there. And to be fair, they're probably worse than that because they don't have their best player, Robert Carter. They didn't have Trey Gunn for 32 minutes. They didn't have Solomon Poole. Those are three of their best five players right there. They played a walk-on for 5 minutes against us. Quentin Stevens, who was coming on strong, came in the game, hit a three, picked up two fouls in about 35 seconds. He played 13 minutes. And yet this team took us to the woodshed, 79-70. I mean, yeah. It was a disgraceful performance. It was embarrassing.
And Marcus Georges Hunt is a very good player.
Yeah.
And it showed with 23 points at 125 offensive rating the other day. And again, Daniel Miller's a very good player.
Miller had come up extremely. He had 16 points, 14 rebounds.
Yeah. Heck, three blocks, two steals. You know, we discussed that he's a good player. But again, that's two players. And no disrespect to Georgia Tech. And I'm sure the team expected to win. You got to go into every game expecting to win, playing to win. But we came out flat. We just didn't play well.
Yeah, I mean,
it
was an inexcusable performance. And we'll talk a little about this later. Cody Miller-McIntyre went down early. That's a loss. But you look at the team playing on the road.
He played 17 minutes.
Yeah, he played 17. He was having a very good game. I don't know if ironic is the word here. He was actually playing with high confidence. You know, he's taking shots early on. He took nine shots. He took
10 total
shots. He took 10 shots. That's four more than the entire Syracuse game. He had 10 points, three boards, a reasonable offensive rating, and then he gets hurt. I think he said he'd be back in time for the Duke game tomorrow night. Rob and I talked a little about this last night. Who cares? Sit him out. We got a break after the Duke game
tomorrow. Well, I do care. I'd prefer he didn't play.
Yeah, and I mean – there's no point. There's no reason for him to play at all tomorrow night.
No,
I mean you don't ever want to. No, forget it.
We're not going to win the game. No. We'll briefly preview the game later on, but you know, KenPom gives us a 5% chance. I think that's 5% too many. I mean,
5% chance the Duke team doesn't show up to Cameron tomorrow night. Yeah. No, and I don't mean show up. I mean they physically
get lost.
Yeah, they physically do not make it into Cameron.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's. You know, we talk about, well, let's think about how ways we could win this game. It's inconceivable to me. I can't imagine a way in which we win this game. A team who played so well last week against a great Pittsburgh team, and a team who, although they lost to Syracuse the other night, what was still one of the best performances of any team I've seen.
That's one of the best basketball games I've seen in a long time.
I mean, it was an exceptional game. But, you know, any more thoughts on...
I mean, Travis McKay had a heck of a game. I rode him pretty hard a couple of weeks ago. He's come alive since then.
Hey, we call it.
I will say
162 offensive rate.
If he hustled as much as he did towards the end of that Georgia Tech game all year, then I believe we could have had a couple more wins. I mean that. I'm not taking away. He went 11-11 from the line on 10 shots, 6 of 10. That's a 162 offensive rating, 26 points. Two boards, four steals, two blocks, two assists. That's a great game. You don't expect that every game, but I mean, you know, effort, I believe, has been an issue with Travis. And I know I've said earlier in podcasts that I didn't think that was the case, but I mean, seeing what he can produce now is just, I don't know.
Well, we've seen what he could produce his entire career.
And he's a great, and Bart, I believe, had the long form coming up. The critical thing
should
there.
Should be coming out Friday.
Right, and one of the critical lines from that, you know, he kind of talked over it. If Wake Forest doesn't win an ACC tournament game this year, I doubt we'll make the NIT or the NCAA tournament at this rate.
And we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, we can discuss that. If Travis McKay doesn't win an ACC game, he will be the only player in Wake Forest history to have not ever won a postseason game since the ACC formed in 1952.
Yeah.
So he'll be the only player never to have won a postseason game. And that's
ACC tournament or NIT or NCAA.
And that's a dubious distinction. And Bart and I took quite some time there to do that.
Do some research.
I think the last four-year player not to make it was Sam Ivey and a couple other players back in the early 80s to not make a postseason during their 4 years here.
But they won an ACC tournament game.
Yeah, and no, Travis McCall would be the only player in Wake Forest history never to win a postseason game, which is, I mean, you got to feel for a guy that's given this much to his Wake for 4 years. And, you know, just kind of one thing that stuck out to me recently, and I know we've always been bad at offensive rebounding, but, I mean, it seems to now, it's just to a fault. The players, they shoot the ball, they don't follow it. The shot goes up, people are running back. It's one thing to just stop transition completely, which I think we usually do a reasonable job of. You got to try to rebound the ball. We're rebounding the ball at 24.7% of our misses, which is dead last in the ACC in conference play.
And that's something that was a quote-unquote strength for us earlier in the year. Yeah. But, you know, again, as we've said multiple times, those Ken Palm numbers are unadjusted in terms of the rebounding percentages. The offensive and defensive efficiency are adjusted for competition, but the rebounding percentage, the effective field goal percentage, turnover percentage, things like that are not adjusted for competition. So now you're starting to see, well, we were rebounding for a reason because we were just physically bigger than those other teams playing a preseason or non-conference.
Yeah, offensive rebounding is a lot about coaching. Earlier in the conference season, that we were in the right place. We just weren't grabbing the ball. That's fine. Our guys, this is another point of us being unprepared in the ACC, but it wasn't that they were in the wrong place. It was just that they were getting out-athleted, if you will, to the ball by Carolina, which is understandable. Notre Dame, same case there. But, I mean, now it's just we're not even trying to get the offensive rebound. I mean, if I see one more time of our players shoot the ball, I mean, Karan Williams has done a lot of good things for us. He's at midcourt by the time the ball even gets to the rim at half his shots. I mean, step up. I mean, that's I don't know whether it's a product of poor coaching or lack of effort or combination, but, I mean, I'm tired of seeing it. I mean, it's disgraceful.
I mean, and we talk about, you know, the four factors a lot, and rebounding is incredibly important to those.
Especially for a team that misses many shots like Wake does. Three of 15 from threes again against Georgia Tech. I mean, we went 20 of 49. That's 29 misses. That's a lot of chances to grab offensive rebounds, and we grabbed 7. That's 23.3%. First in the ACC, it's 42%. We're at 24.7%. That's a lot more possessions. I mean, like I said, I think it's a combination of coaching and lack of wanting to get to the ball, honestly. I mean, I'm not throwing players under the bus, but, I mean, rebounding's a lot of hustle. I take a guy that rebounds well any day on my team, if that's his only...
Look, Kevin Love, now he's done a lot to improve his position, and I have a man crush on Kevin Love, for those of you who don't know. I mean...
Little Caleb, actually.
You know, if the NBA were to have a combine or a track meet, you know, he would not finish very highly. No. But what's he do? He leads the league in rebounding and double-doubles, and that's because he outworks people, and he outsmarts people by sort of reading the bounce well and knowing where to be on the court. And that's coaching, and that's effort. And obviously, size plays a role in rebounding. We won't deny that. But there's more to it than just being big.
Yeah, if you take Devin Thomas out of the game on Saturday, he had 9 rebounds. We have 5 guys over 6'6" on our team, they combined for 6 rebounds.
Yeah.
6 total rebounds.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, that's disgraceful.
Yeah, I mean, Modo and Thomas are really our only 2 rebounders on the team.
Yeah, and I mean
they attack the glass. I give them plenty of credit for their ability to crash the boards. But, I mean, you cannot just... Much like our shooting with Karan Williams, you cannot just rely on one player on the court to do that.
No, the problem with the team that we have right now is that so many of our players are just one-dimensional. They are good at one thing. Modo, primarily, he's coming around.
Although he's starting to
slash. He is coming around. He's a rebounder. He's a rebounder. Devin Thomas is primarily a rebounder. He's coming around a little bit. Karan Williams is a three-point shooter. Madison Jones is, I don't know what Madison Jones is, a ball handler, I guess, sometimes. Dre's a shot blocker. Roundtree's an energy guy. None of these guys, I mean, Cody Miller-McIntyre and Travis McKay right now are really the only 2 players on the team that have
more 5-tool players.
They have a discernible 5. I'll take 2-tool.
Okay,
2 tools. I mean, they're the only players on the team right now, maybe Devin Thomas when his scoring is on, that can...
I mean, Devin Thomas is more than a one-dimensional
player. Yeah, he can rebound and score.
He can score.
But you can't win in the ACC with that many players that are only good at one and a half to two things. I mean, it's not feasible.
You know, it's not football. You know, you play offense, and then you go back and you play defense.
Yeah, and I actually think our defense has been reasonably good. So we have Syracuse to 6 points in the first 10 minutes. That's really good. The three-point shooting is going to catch up to us. It's a matter of time, and it's kind of starting to trend that way. You can't allow a team to shoot as many threes as we have been allowing over the last 10 games and expect them not to make them. I mean, it's a number thing.
And that is just a frustrating thing when you hear a coaching staff, and it's probably not just our coaching staff, talk about our three-point percentage defense and how it was top 10 in the country, and that's not a lie. But again, as Riley and I have said, and we will preach over and over again, the number one indicator of three-point defense is shots allowed, three-pointers allowed.
If you take them enough, you're going to make them. And I'm not talking from...
Because the players who take them...
And I'm not talking sheer numbers. I'm talking percentages. I mean, the more you allow, the higher percentage it goes up, the more you allow. And I think I read it a couple of years ago. An article by Kim Pomeroy wrote, the only exception to the rule seems to be Syracuse, who they allow a lot of threes, and teams don't make them over a long period of time. They are probably a case study in itself.
And I'm sure the shot clock comes into play there where they have to heave. You know, teams have to heave one up.
Right. I mean, we're not saying that three-point shot selection doesn't matter. We're saying that if you take enough threes, you're going to make a reasonably high percentage than those that allow less threes. That basic understanding basketball, which is apparently like the fourth down attempt in football that coaches don't grasp yet.
We'll keep preaching it till they listen.
So, bad loss, bad week. And, you know, it kind of carried over into the press conference and interviews from what I saw, transitioning off the court and into the locker room and media. It's kind of turned a little ugly. Players are starting to blame each other from what I can see. They're discontent.
The crowd a little bit.
Blaming the fans, which is completely laughable. Wake Forest has a foundation here to win in terms of a fan base. They have fans that want to win. They have fans that want to support a winning team. And to turn around and blame the fans for the struggles over the last 4 years, it's ridiculous.
And I hate to interrupt you, but, you know, what have we heard Jeff Bezdelic say multiple times? We've heard him use that statistic about fourth best attendance in the ACC.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how I didn't know how exactly it was calculated. I guess it's just sheer number. But, you know,
Cass Stevens numbers, we have no idea what that's going to be.
They're looking real good.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point is, let's accept that number for a fact, which I'm sure it's factually somehow, otherwise somebody will call him out on it.
Yeah.
So, here we are, we've had a team who in the last 3 years has won 8, 13, and 13 games, yet we still, in the year we went 13 and 18, had the fourth best attendance in the ACC, an elite basketball conference.
Yeah, I mean,
tell me the community's
giving up. And for those of you that didn't know, Dan Collins wrote a really spot on article on Saturday.
Let's
after
get
the
exact quote.
Just kind of getting in here. And this was Devin Thomas after the game. We're not ones to call out people here, but Rob and I both thought that Devin Thomas's post-game comments were an extremely poor take, not just about the fan, but, I mean, it's a loser's mentality.
He had a multitude of poor comments that I disagree with.
I'll read them right now. As to the loss, Devin Thomas said, it was real damaging. We're supposed to win this game. Cody's out now. We just got to get ready for Duke on Tuesday. That's the only thing I've got to say.
And had he stopped there, he would have been great.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
Nothing wrong with that statement at all.
I know for a fact that the community is going to start giving up on us, just like last time, which is ridiculous because we apparently had the fourth highest attendance in the ACC last year. So last time,
a sub-500 record.
The only thing we've got to focus on is just staying together. When we start getting back to our winning ways, they'll start getting back on the bandwagon again. We don't have to worry about that. Let's stop there. The fact that Wake Forest would ever be considered a bandwagon fan base is literally the farthest thing from the truth. And I don't know, Devin Thomas apparently doesn't know a lot about Wake Forest history, being from Pennsylvania. But, I mean, he might want to open the
record books.
The media guide. See how successful Wake Forest has been. We've lost 9 straight games to Georgia Tech and Clemson. I doubt if we lost more than 9 games total over the 10 years before Jeff Padella got here.
Well, Clemson, I believe, we hadn't lost to them at home since 1990,
yeah,
or maybe 89, something like that.
Yeah, and
prior to 2 years ago.
And so pardon me if I don't actually take what Devin Thomas is saying as a lifelong Wake Forest fan and season ticket holder who's seen it from the highs of highs with Tim Duncan and Randolph Children to the lowest of lows of JT Terrell and Melvin Tabb. I mean,
and it was a good win against Iowa.
So to blame the fan base, the fan base is literally on a list of 1 to 1,000 reasons of Wake Forest why Wake Forest is bad right now. It's not even on the radar. I mean, the fan support is not even on the radar.
I'm surprised it's as high as it is.
And Thomas then went on to use the next lamest excuse in the book, which is that they lost because we lost. I'll say we, because I'm a fan. I missed this one. Chalked it up to the loss of Cody Miller McIntyre. And Dan Collins put it perfectly. He said, quote unquote, I wanted to use my stock line. The next best thing to winning is to lose with a good excuse, because Georgia Tech didn't have Robert Carter Jr., who led the ACC in rebounds at the time of his injury. Didn't have Trey Gowen, who was injured 8 minutes into the game, their point guard, fifth-year senior from Tennessee.
Experienced starting guard from Tennessee.
And he played a walk-off for 5 or 6 minutes of the game, which, I mean, also without
Solomon Poole. I don't know if this is factored into it. I mean, their city's been under snow for the whole week prior to that. I mean, now, that's extraneous and probably didn't impact them as much, but it's a factor.
On an aside, I had not heard this earlier today. apparently the Atlanta mayor tweeted the morning of the snow, "We're ready for the snow, bring it on." That might be the worst thing to say. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
That's your definition of the word is.
Yeah.
Well, hey, he's not hashtag soft-nosed. He's saying bring it on. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, so, but Devin Thomas, apparently, and this might go back to coaching, considering apparently he had no idea who Trey Gowen was, because he said, quote-unquote, I think it's safe
to say... He was one of the 8 scholarship players who entered the game.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that Cody's more valuable to Wake Forest than Gowen is to Georgia Tech. I honestly didn't realize until the end of the game that Gowen wasn't in the game. I don't even know what happened.
Again,
and then the next of
Trey Golden played 8 minutes.
Right, and some stuff in between there. Who's the backup to for us? Miles? He's really not that experienced. He's been getting a little time here, but Cody gets in the gaps. Cody gets in the lane, and he makes plays for himself, and that's what we were missing in the second half. There are several things there that's wrong.
Yeah, it's... And maybe he didn't mean to knock on Miles as much as he did. It comes off worse than what he intended,
I believe.
I would hope, but I think he's merely stating Cody's better than Miles, and Miles would admit that himself. I think he's trying to credit Cody, but it doesn't come off right.
And we will both say that. Cody, this is not an opinion. Cody Miller McIntyre is better at basketball than Miles Overton.
That's a fact.
I mean, it is. But Cody Miller McIntyre and Trey Gowen are very comparable players. They both average 14.6 points per game. They're both, I mean, Trey Gowen has more experience than Cody. And I think it's just short, it was very short-sighted of Devin to say that Cody's more valuable. And obviously that comes.
Whether it's true or not, it's.
He might be more valuable to Wake Forest, but it doesn't mean that he's
don't say
a
that.
Lesser player.
You don't make excuses, you know?
I mean, look.
You show up with who you got, and you go play.
Yeah,
that's what Georgia Tech did, and they won the game.
Yeah, and the final thing he said was, when asked about the Deacons' slow start to both the first half, Thomas had his rejoinder ready. Don't we always come out slow in the first half? He asked. The sarcasm just a-dripping.
Well, we have made our comments about Jeff Bozdilek's halftime adjustments.
We come out slow in every half because we're a bad basketball team.
We are due for a timeout, usually within the first... You know, we call timeouts earlier into the second half than the Seattle Seahawks score in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, not only are they timeouts, they are hashtag Bozdilek machine gun timeout. I mean,
they are.
So, it kind of playing off that, I mean, everything that Devin Thomas said in that post game, and I understand raw emotion.
Outside of his first two sentences, was not good.
And for a guy that turned the ball over seven times against
you. As a power forward center.
Now, Devin Thomas, he has progressed well. I'm not trying to – I know that I've come off very harsh against Devin Thomas. But can we get a little less talk and a little more play? 7 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 turnovers. Now, he did have 3 steals and a block, 4 assists. He had a very stuffed game. But before you go calling out backup guards, you go calling out the fan base, you go say that the opposing player is –
let's look in the mirror.
Yeah, look in the mirror and see what you can do better.
And not even necessarily, you know, himself doing better, but let's, you know, accountability. That seems to be something that is – missing in the Wake Forest athletic department is accountability.
Yeah, there is no accountability. I mean, the players aren't accountable for each other. The coaching staff certainly isn't accountable for the players. But the athletic department's not accountable for the basketball staff. I mean, it starts at the top. I mean, and this is a rant for another day, but I mean, obviously...
Well, we'll talk about it now. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I mean, tensions are boiling over a little bit, and I mean, you know, it's funny.
You saw a lot of tweets. Let's just talk about the elephant in the room. I mean, we saw a lot of tweets and a lot of message boards comments from people who don't necessarily always make these comments and say, well, you know, that loss might have been the nail in the coffin for Jeff Pistella, because Riley, well, you know, we'll talk briefly about the upcoming games here. Over our next 5 games, I believe 4 of which are on the road.
Yeah, we have 4 on the road. I think it's Duke State, then we have Florida State here, then Maryland and Carolina.
We are expected to win 1.13 of those.
Yeah, so
that's our expected.
That would put us at what? That 5-9.
That would make us
in the conference
15-12 overall. And yeah. 5-9 in the ACC. Then, if you look at the Final Four. We're expected to win 1.68. So, I mean, even say we split those two, to be generous, that's 7-11.
This is year 4.
In 17 and 14, I mean, this entire roster, outside of Travis McKay, who's a legitimate, very good starter for us, was hand-selected by Jeff Pistella. It is what it is. I mean... I know Daniel Green's not here, and I know we've had some people transfer.
I mean, those are also,
but that's
under his watch.
But that's under his watch, and you know, 17-14. Let's just assume we go with what's. I mean, we're only projected to win the Boston College game. That's the only game we'll be favored in from here on out. I mean, which is baffling considering we have 4 more home games to go. Now Clemson's a toss up.
Yeah, I think we'll get to probably 8-10. This is not a bad team in the ACC. It's a bad team by Wake Forest standard. One thing I do want to address is the people that think Wake fans have too high expectations for their team. And I think that's the most ludicrous statement I've heard, and I believe I might be a little off of the stat. Before Jeff Pistella got here, Wake had made the postseason NCAA tournament or NIT, 18 out of 20 years. I mean, and
that's the absolute truth of, and that's just factually correct. I mean, not all were NCAA tournament, but hey, we haven't made a postseason tournament since.
No, and I keep hearing all these arguments like, well, Wake shouldn't expect to be that. Why?
Why not?
Why not? The last 20 years before Jeff Pistella got here, we made 18 postseason tournaments. Excluding, obviously, the ACC, which you make every year. I mean...
And, you know, one of those years we didn't make it, well, I think we finished 17-16 or something like that. Dino Gaudio's first year, and my goodness.
Those were certainly...
I mean, what a situation. It is one of his best friends dies in July in the late, great Skip Prosser.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, it's that year and the year we went 3-13 after Chris Paul left. We're the only 2 years we didn't make the NCAA... make the postseason... in the past 20 years before Jeff Pistella. And so anyway, we're staring down. We're not even looking at postseason. I mean, if we go 17-14, that's 51 wins in 4 years for Jeff Pistella. That's 12.75 over a 4-year span.
That's very good for the NFL. It's not very good for college basketball.
Yeah, that's not. It's not good for anybody.
That's not good for anybody. It's unacceptable. Is what it is. And I'll just say I hope the appropriate changes are made come March, And, you know, I have to think with the great rejuvenation to the football program, which we'll,
that can only help.
We'll talk about
current situation
a little bit later. And, you know, he's seen the fan reaction to what's going on.
He's seen the money pour in, which if he doesn't care about the fans, he needs to care about the money, because that's what his job is paid on.
You know, as they say in the great movie Wall Street, money never sleeps.
Nah.
So,
scared money don't make money.
Scared money don't make money. It's a difficult situation. I hate that Wake Forest fans have to go through it. And absolutely, do we deserve better? Absolutely. And that's all I'm going
to
say.
And it's just comical to me that the fan base is now being called out by the players. And I understand that this was an isolated incident. I think Devin Thomas knows that what he's saying is not true. I think it was an emotional statement.
And
I think if he were given the chance again in the year.
And to be fair, it's a 19, 20-year-old right after a loss. I get that.
I know he's frustrated. I'm frustrated.
I'm frustrated.
I don't play. I mean, I'm frustrated that we don't rebound our shots that we take. I mean, I'm frustrated at everything. It's not a happy.
It's frustrating being one of the better players on the team. You know, that's always frustrating when you feel like you're doing your job and maybe your teammates aren't doing their job.
And I'm not trying to jump all over Devin Thomas. I think his effort and his hustle has increased and improved extremely.
I love Devin
extremely
Thomas.
Well,
I love Devin Thomas. We're just. You know, what you and I like to do on a weekly basis is isolated incidents. We call it like we see it, and we're objective. We were complimentary of how they played against Syracuse. We were very critical of how they played against Georgia Tech.
We're critical
of these post-game comments.
Yeah, and just kind of big picture, we're trying to develop – clearly we're not – winning games right now. So what we're trying to pride ourselves on is culture and winning the right way when we do win. And the game on Saturday was an example of losing on the court and losing off the court, and that's unacceptable. I hope they had good test scores on Friday, because if they're not doing well in the classroom, I don't know what they're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, all you got to say is, look, we did not play well enough to win. We expected to win.
Yeah.
We should have won this game. I'm fine if you say you should have won this game. You should have won this game.
They should have. Yeah, they should have won this game.
You know, they were favored to win this
and
game.
And it comes off of sour grapes, and I don't want Wake Forest to be represented like that. I don't want people to look and say they're blaming everybody
but
themselves.
They're making excuses.
And that's before this basketball team can blame anybody else, they've got to look in the mirror, because there are enough deficiencies on the basketball court to
look elsewhere,
to fill up the entire mirror and not have room for anybody else, especially the fan base and sports writers and the opposing team. Let's look at ourselves first, and let's show some class when you just get beat like you did on Saturday.
Absolutely.
So, well, that's about all I've got to say about that.
Well, you know, I think we addressed that I think we said what needed to be said.
Yeah.
Now, looking forward to next week. Well, I use looking forward. Well, next week, tomorrow night, I guess.
We have one game of that, dude.
You know, oh, by the way, a team who's top three on KenPom, I don't know what they were in the latest AP ranking, whatever it was probably.
They moved up six spots. So I think they were 17, so 11th.
Oh, well, that's not high enough. They're a very good team. I mean, you know, this is kind of like when we previewed that Clemson game in one of our first podcasts. It might have been the first one we did.
What's the second one?
I mean, you know, what? How do we win? How do we win this game? There's no chance.
No, we don't win. We don't win.
We
the
don't
game.
Win this game.
I mean, no, we don't.
When was the last time we won in Cameron? When Tim Duncan was there?
And I believe, could be wrong. It could have been a late cover. I don't think we've kept it within 10 at Cameron since then. So we won four straight.
We
Duncan,
came
Duncan and LaRue's four
I
years.
I feel like we lost by 10 the year we had Teague Johnson and Aminu.
Yeah, and I mean, but we haven't been competitive, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that one was close for a while. But, yeah, I mean,
Duke has the best offense in the country. They overtook Creighton this past week. Their adjusted efficiency is 127.9.
I mean, they put up nearly 90 against Syracuse.
Which is 2.4 points better than Creighton. So they average 1.27 points to 1.28 points up and down the court every possession, which is outstanding. The defense is elite. They're 85th in the country, but our offense is 158. So
and that defense, it has been getting better throughout the season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not great, but it's getting better for sure. I mean, they
have too many weapons.
They're just far too talented.
And we can't match up. We've got a zone. We won't zone because we have a bad coach, but we need to zone. We need to start Moto. We'll start Cav.
Without question.
Because we have a bad coach.
Whatever we should do, you know, it's the George Costanza. You take your instinct and do the opposite. You take what good basketball teams would do, and we do the opposite.
Yeah, and I mean, from the outset, we are extremely overmatched. Jabari Parker, Quinn Cook, Rodney Hood, Rasheed Suleiman, and Emile Jefferson. I mean, we don't win a single matchup on that court, period. Not even close.
You could maybe argue point guard, but I disagree. I think Quinn Cook's better.
Yeah, I mean, our point guard might not even play.
I mean, our point guard. He should not play. Right. Rest for NC State a winnable game.
Yeah, and I mean, just going through the man-to-man, I can't even fact. So Madison on Quinn Cook, I guess Cody on Sewell, I mean, I don't know. There's no matchup that
looks. Suleiman, I mean, Jefferson's going
to
be.
We have to zone. But the problem is they shoot too many threes. So I'd match up.
We run a 3-2 zone against them, but I've never seen us run a 3-2.
I just match up 2-3.
Yeah.
I mean, our great leader wrote a book and made a movie about it. So he should be able to coach it.
Almost won an Oscar. It didn't. But, I mean.
They voted on the road anyway.
But I mean, look. You look at Rodney Hood. You look at Jabari Parker. Those guys are freaks. Moto could check one of them reasonably
Moto is considered. Travis isn't a good rebounder, but he has the tools to be a good. Defender. But he has the tools to be a good defender.
He lacks some lateral quickness, but you know that would be our best choice. But
it's not of whether we will win.
How much we
will lose by. And I mean, I think Bart said it best. They'll get it up around 25 to 30, and they'll put their scrubs in, and we'll bring it down to about 18 to 20. I think that's a reasonable guess.
Well, you know, I'm going to come sounding off like just the most negative person ever. I'm taking Duke to win 90-60.
I mean,
I don't want to play Duke after that performance on against Syracuse. I think they're going to be mad. I think they're going to do whatever they want to against us, and I think they will.
Yeah, and at this point, just kind of hearing the comments from the team and coming around the team, you got to wonder when. I think the staff have already lost the team. I think they have for a little bit. I think they're on the verge of becoming extremely.
I don't think about the upcoming stretch.
And I'm not. This isn't any insider information. It's just what I've seen. I don't think the team overall likes each other. I think they're. They're not the biggest fans of each other. They don't seem to get along. They seem to point fingers at the first sign of adversity. And all that comes from their coach, Jeff Bezdelic, who refuses to accept blame for anything, throws his players under the bus, points fingers when they're unnecessary, and, I mean, basically just refuses to accept that anything is his fault. And, I mean, the team thrives off that. And that's why it's hard to blame players like Devin Thomas when they see the same thing. Jeff Bedelic spends more time around these kids than any other player, any other adult does. And I mean, that's sad.
That's unfortunate.
I mean.
He's not a leader.
No,
I hate him. And you know, this is maybe this is a bad example. I mean, I coach Y basketball, 15 to 18-year-old kids. And, you know, we're having a down year. But, you know, after every game, I tell them, guys, that's on me. You know, I accept responsibility because I think we have talent on the team. And, you know, they'll say, well, we didn't make shots. I'll say, well, it's my job to get you better shots. I mean, that's a coach's job. And, you know, I think that's what you should do as a man. And especially we want to talk about collegiate athletics. And he talks about, you know, you got to win. You're getting paid big bucks.
Yeah, and that's my biggest problem with the whole thing. You hear kind of the
side. He's not a volunteer.
You're talking out of the side of your mouth when you say we want these men to grow up and we want them to be respectful. We want them to be leaders in the community. We want them to do this and that. When it's clearly not, you're just giving lip service to it. You're not putting any force behind it. And I mean, at this point, I'm talking beyond basketball. I mean, these are life lessons that need to be learned. I mean, and he's doing a poor job leading on and off the court. I mean, it takes a miserable human being to continue to say the things that I've heard in the media. I mean, from Jeff Bezdelic. Low self-esteem. And I hate bashing him. I really do. I'm not a negative person. I'm a very optimistic person.
I want him to succeed. I want him to be the best coach Wake Forest has ever had. I want to win out this year. I want to win the national
championship. Yeah, I mean, if we win it, I'll give all the crediting the world.
Again, we call it like we see it. The record is what it is.
Yeah, this is year four, and while we do have guys that I think are, I will say they, I believe they are better representations of our university than what we have seen in the past.
But you're here on a basketball scholarship. But again, they're basketball scholarships. They're not here on a humanitarian
right.
scholarship.
This isn't the Tim Duncan Character Award Project.
And what do we see on ESPN and ESPNU? We see the game being played, and we see the final score. And look, and you look at – I hate to discredit being good in the community because I do think that's important. But, you know
– Good hand award. Free.
I don't need these guys to be choir boys. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I don't expect them to volunteer the soup kitchen every Sunday morning. I expect them
don't get arrested.
I expect them to go to class, to do their work, to not break the law, to be good, just generally nice people, and to play basketball to the utmost of their potential.
Now, is that a lot to ask? Yes, but you know what else is? Getting a free $60,000 education to one of the finest universities in America.
And you know, it's just. And it's nothing bad the players have done. It's just, you know, let's not act like... Because, again, if you go on ESPN, what will every announcer say? Oh, he's just a great young man. Yeah. They will say that about yeah. every single player. And, you know, most of them are just nice guys.
Aaron Kraft could be the biggest D-bag in the history of the world, but all you hear is, look at his leadership. Great leader. Hustle.
You know why? Because he wins games.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, he could... He punches grandma after the game. Dick Vitale would say, "Oh my God, look at the wall."
Let's not go saying that.
Sports in his top 10 is of dunks and extremely athletic play. That's not of helping grandma cross the street.
I mean,
that's how it is.
Look, you just gotta win. Again, you know, we don't need highlight dunks. We can win like Pittsburgh. You never see Pittsburgh on the Sports Center top 10, but you know what they. They get results. You never see Virginia on the SportsCenter top 10. It's not sexy basketball.
When they hit game winning threes to beat Pittsburgh.
But it's effective and it's great basketball. And that's what we need. You know, you look at programs like that and you say, we should be just as good as that. And we absolutely should. And that's, and you know, maybe that was a bit of a rant, but
I mean,
it had to be said. We've held back before, and you know, we really haven't had an opportunity to say anything. And
this year, we haven't had a need to. This is the first bad loss.
And we thought this time was coming. We did, but you know what? Again, we're going to be fair, and we're not going to say we're not going to anticipate losses. And I guess we sort of did, but now we're seeing.
Well, I anticipated a loss to Syracuse. I didn't anticipate a loss to Georgia Tech.
Again,
because we were the better team. We're at home, and we should have won.
Plain and simple. Anything else you'd like to say regarding Jeffrey?
No. I'll save some for next week.
We'll save some for next week.
Well, next week probably won't be a lot to say because we got some signing day stuff. We got Dukes.
Well, go on.
No, I'm just saying next week when we do the podcast, there's going to be a lot of more about, you know, football.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're going to have a podcast coming out Wednesday night sometime. Yeah. And let's talk football real quick.
I will eagerly talk about that.
Look, we've been talking about Jeff Bozdilek. Now we're going to talk about the complete opposite, somebody who's been very successful, and Dave Clawson, somebody who's won, and somebody who's a complete man of integrity and a complete man of accountability.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Clawson.
Yeah.
It is it is unbelievable the job he has done in just – you know, a little, about 2 months on the job. This is a recruiting class that was ranked, you know, around 90th out of 125 FBS schools, which is unacceptable for an FBS program. Now, to give some credit to the previous staff, obviously they would have gotten more commits, so that ranking likely would have gone up. But the man just gets it done, and obviously nothing is official till Wednesday when we get the papers.
They're commits. They're not fine.
They're verbal commits, but they're solid verbal commits. I mean, you look at the past week, we got linebacker safety Zach Wary, who had a gray shirt offer, which is a legitimate scholarship offer from Arkansas. Just today, he got offered by Oklahoma State, but he said, no, thank you. I'm committed to Wake Forest University.
Boise State went hard
Boise after. State went hard after him. You know, just a lot of...
Oh. Got the number three kicker in the class today. That's huge.
Today, we got the number three kicker in the class today in Adam Centers, and we also got a kicker who's a preferred walk-on, so he will not take up one of the 85 scholarships out of Tampa. Not a great field goal kicker. Sorry, that's Riley's dog, Grizzly, back there, showing a lot of enthusiasm. He's excited about signing day, too. Maybe he'll watch ESPNU while Riley's at work all day in National Signing Day coverage.
I'll leave it on for him. He can report back.
But you know, he could be a kickoff specialist, but again, nothing to lose with a preferred walk-on. He doesn't take up any scholarship spots. We had Chris Knight, a defensive end prospect. Again, we've talked about Zeke Rodney in the past. We got Rashawn Law.
And John Wolford, I believe, was named this week an honorable mention. Parade All-American. Hopefully he will turn out better than the last Parade All-American.
Chase Fisher. And you know, I'm curious to see what he does at BYU, but that's a topic for a different day.
I bet he lights it up.
He's probably the next Jimmer Fredette. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of optimism around this football program. I believe, what are we, on fringe top 50 nationally?
I think we're 58th according to 247 Sports, but that's without Terrence Ricks. I don't think he's being counted. He's another three-star. He's around an 82. So he's not – he's a good prospect. He's a good commit, but he's not like the elite of the elite that we have landed. Currently, Zeke Rodney and Rashawn Shaw are our top two commits, both landed in the last week and a half, and then Jalen Barber, a wide receiver out of Monroe.
That got him under the previous staff, and yeah. You know, he's remained committed.
One of the big things to look forward to, and I think we talked about this a little last week, the quarterback battle next year is going to be very good between John Wolford, Travis Smith, both true freshmen coming in, and
Tyler Cameron.
And you've got to think one of those guys will win, the other will red shirt, and then they'll compete with Cameron, whoever that'll be, 1A, 1B, however that turns out. That's kind of how I'm looking at it from now.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be something that's very interesting. You know, Clawson could go in a variety of ways with that. One possibility would be, obviously he'll start the best guy, but one legitimate possibility is, well, we're going to start Tyler Cameron this year, who, by the way, I mean, he had some offers from LSU and UCLA coming out of high school. He's a dual-threat guy. I mean, we haven't seen much of him. We saw him get thrown to the wolves against Clemson and Florida State last year. Not exactly the most fair circumstances of which to judge him. So, you know, I liked him coming out of high school. We will see what happens with him. So it's a possibility. You know, he starts in 2014, and then at the same time, Wolford and Smith both redshirt, and then you go hard in spring ball,
yeah.
And see who wins that battle, and then you know, unfortunately, one of them will probably transfer. But
that's kind of how it.
And you know, that's sort of the way it is. But that's how competition goes. That's
the good thing about kind of stockpiling talent as far as Wake Forest standards go, like we have been with this recruiting class, is that Dave Clawson doesn't really have a set offensive mentality other than get the ball to the best player. So, you know, he's saying he's going to go land the most talented guys.
And then we'll adjust to them.
Right, if you get on the field, we're going to do it. So, I mean, you know, whether that's Tyler Cameron running the option, whether that's Wolford or Travis Smith in the pro style, I mean, you know, win the battle, get on the field, and Clawson will reward you by getting you the ball the way you need to get the ball. Yeah. So I'm excited about seeing that.
And one person we hope gets the ball is Cameron Uter. I'm not sure if we talked about him last week, but this guy is an absolute tank at wide receiver. Also a good baseball prospect. Should play baseball for us as well. So
yeah, I think he's a prospect to be drafted.
I mean,
so
he's a legitimate prospect.
I mean, I might be a prospect to be drafted in the MLB. But
you got millions of rounds, it seems like. But yes, I am thrilled for signing day. You know, maybe I should have followed it more in years past, but I haven't had as much reason to.
I mean,
but
I've heard before that it was unfeasible to think that Wake Forest could ever have a top 50 recruiting class in football, and I think that Clawson. It took Clawson all of 2.5 months. And I will give Coach Krebs and the previous staff a lot of credit. They identified a lot of this talent. I mean, it's not like Clawson coming in and just randomly picking players out. I mean, we had identified this talent, but you got to land it. And, you know, Grubbs won. He's tied for the most wins ever at Wake Forest. We're not discrediting that. And Clawson, he hasn't won anything yet. So we're heaping this praise on him. And, I mean, I don't want it to come across as, you know, we're just being ungrateful for what Coach Grove did and what You know, I mean, just
Coach
Grobel
elevated the program
yes.
to the point where Clawson can come in and recruit better than he could have a decade ago.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're very optimistic and excited about the future, and I think we're going to do a great job, but it's got to translate on the field, and if not, then we'll hold him accountable,
we'll
too.
We'll hold him accountable, too. But again, if you look at recruiting rankings, it's not an exact science, but they've got it down pretty well. And you look at
correlation.
You look at correlation between results on the field and recruiting rankings. Alabama finishes pretty high in the recruiting rankings too,
yes.
and not just on the AP polls.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about. I'm really excited about what he could do next year. And you know, I'm thrilled to watch what this team can do in the fall. I wasn't excited if we had the same old staff, but now we got new energy. I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do.
Yeah, I mean, we're not looking for 8 wins this year.
I'm just looking for smart football.
I'm not even looking for 6.
I'm looking for improvement.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of times I feel like Wake Forest fans get called out for being unreasonable. You know, especially a lot of people don't think Wake Forest should strive for a bowl should expect a bowl. And there's a difference in trying to get to a bowl and expecting a bowl. But I mean, in this current day and age of You play 3 cupcakes and out of conference, and maybe
smart.
One. Not to mention we play Syracuse, State, BC every year. That probably should be one a year at least.
At least.
There's no reason to think that we shouldn't hit 6 wins at least every 2 years. And I stand by that.
It all comes back to changing your expectations. And this quote is somewhat related, somewhat not. And I'm reminded, I love this quote by Henry Ford, when he said, if I just asked my customers what they wanted, they would tell me they wanted a faster horse. And again, it's all about coming in and changing expectations and changing perceptions. Dave Clawson says our goal is to be champions. Well, hey, Wake Forest won an ACC championship in 2006. There's living proof that it happened. And here Clawson is going in and trying to set that foundation, getting the best recruits that he can, offering great kids. And he's got a vision for the program. I mean, as he says, if your goal is not to be champions, you're setting your goals too low, and clearly you're not going to get there. I think that's an issue we've had in the past. You talk about goal being to make a bowl game. Well, if that is your goal, well, you're setting yourself up for a reward of 6 games. And as we talked about, there's no wiggle room there. So if you fall short, you know, you're out of a bowl. Whereas
yeah.
you say your goal to be champions, hey, you fall a little short, maybe at 6-7 wins, you're still in a bowl game.
Got to shoot for the moon, because even if you miss, you'll land upon the stars, Rob.
I know it's corny, but it's absolutely the truth. You dress for success, and again, that's corny as always, but you have to prepare to be the best
yeah.
if you want to be the best. And again, we don't expect Wake Forest to be battling Florida State for national titles or anything, but you know,
not this year.
Not this year. Maybe 2017 or something like that. But you know, we both have 85 scholarships.
Yep. And except Andy, who is content to play with 62. But yeah, I think that was a pretty successful podcast. Got a lot in here. Got a lot off the chest.
Well, it had to be. Again, it had to be said. And you and I don't like being negative. We like to call it like we see it. I mean, truth be told, we have not been the biggest fans of Jeff Pastelic. You know what? Let's go to that one Twitter question. I closed my computer, so. The battery's going. I got a full charger. But, you know, let's. Why would a commit come to Wake Forest to play basketball right now?
Why would a commit? I mean, I guess the short answer is that he probably wouldn't. There is appeal to come to Wake Forest. It's on Tobacco Road. It's got a very rich basketball tradition, among one of the deepest in the nation. But I don't think high school students necessarily care about that. I mean, right now what Wake Forest has is a team that had going to 3 straight losing seasons. You're approaching possibly a 4th. We're going to finish below the middle of the ACC for the 4th year in a row. And it's a what have you done for me lately world. And we haven't done anything lately, and I'm Shelton Mitchell's coming in. We got Greg McClinton, who's redshirting this year. But the long and short of it is, I mean, you wouldn't, and that's why we are where we are. We haven't had him coming in since Jeff Padilla got here, and they don't appear to be coming in the future. Shelton Mitchell is the obvious
exception
as opposed to the rule right now. So I would say, you wouldn't, and they aren't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point, but again, if you know, we've talked, you got the right coach in here. This is a great job. This is a great job, and I would
this team has enough talent to be to make the NCAA tournament.
I mean, I don't think it's a hard recruiting pitch to recruit to Wake Forest. I mean, it is a phenomenal school with a phenomenal tradition, with great facilities, with great fans, with gorgeous women.
We like all those things.
I like all of those things. It's unacceptable that we've been recruiting at the level we have been, because that can be seen as a knock on our current players. But we should be recruiting better, and it's unacceptable that we haven't had our full allotment of scholarships used. I mean, that's just it's just unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, we and a team like Wake Forest should always recruit at a pretty high level, purely because they're in the ACC. You play against the best night in and night out, and I mean, you look at the last
and the three, best live in the backyard.
Yeah, I mean, the last 3 weeks, Wake Forest has played North Carolina, Notre Dame, Syracuse, and tomorrow night will play Duke. I mean, those are four of the best basketball programs in America. Maybe not Notre Dame, but
they're a great athletic program.
Yeah, I mean,
a team that's made a lot of NCAA tournaments. So it's a great league, and we will see what happens. I think the answer to the question is, I think it's an easy sell if you have the right coach.
Yeah, it is. You bring in a guy that knows what he's doing.
You bring in Clawson basketball.
Yeah, takes accountability. And I think the best thing about Clawson being hired for football is that it will probably lead to Jeff Padilla not coming back after this year.
Yes. I agree.
So
I agree. And we'll see what happens.
So, I mean, I think that's pretty much it for the podcast this week. We've talked for about an hour. Hopefully those that are listening now are quite content with what they've heard. I assume if you've listened for 61 minutes, you must like something that you heard. So we will be back for a special edition of a podcast on Wednesday night, recapping everybody that we, I guess we can say, are signed on Wednesday, which yes. I make the frequent mistake of saying we signed people. So anything else you got to say to all the Wake fans out there, Rob?
I say go Deeks. I hope we get DeMarcus Gates, linebacker of Ole Miss. Show him some love. Show him some love on Twitter. It never hurts. We've already been tracking planes as Wake fans. Might as well go full SEC and try and tweet at him and tell him what a great place Wake Forest is. As Clawson says, if they visit, they will come.
Oh, he knows. And De'Erica Hamby leads the ACC in points and rebounds now for women's basketball. Beat up Florida State yesterday by 24. Largest,
top 25 team.
Largest win over ranked team in Wake Forest women's basketball history. So Coach Hoover's got to move in the right way.
Hoover in.
So things are looking up. We've got men and women's tennis, guys. So we've got that as well. But appreciate you listening, and I can't wait to talk to you all on a special edition of Wake Forest Football Signing Day on Wednesday. So, as always, go Deeks.
Go Deeks.